fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, will he still be sending me a Valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I've been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
At the time when the Beatles wrote that song, when you turned 64, you were probably retired, free from work at the factory or the office where you worked one job your entire life, and ready to live out your golden years in leisure if you could afford it. But the world has changed. I'm Glenn Mobergen, and today on Route 51, the subject is retirement, or what passes for that in an era where millions of people have lost large portions of their 401k accounts because of recurring stock market crashes, where millions more are out of work, many of them in their 40s or 50s, due to the worst recession since the Great Depression, where companies have canceled or cut back pensions that used to provide the backbone of security for folks in their later years, where lifelong employment at one job no longer exists for most people, and where the two government programs that provide a social safety net for the elderly, Social Security and Medicare, are being targeted because of our looming national debt. Our guest today is John E. Nelson. He's the author of What Color Is Your Parachute for Retirement, a book that takes an innovative look at what retirement means in the 21st century and how many of us need to rethink our basic assumptions. Mr. Nelson will be conducting two workshops on this subject, sponsored by the United Way of Marathon County and AARP, this coming Tuesday, October 18th. There's one in the morning and one in the evening, both at the Howard Johnson Conference Center in Wausau. And if you're interested attending either of those, I'll give you the phone number for that right now. It's 715-848-2927. That's 715-848-2927. Or you can register online at UnitedWayMC.org. That's UnitedWayMC.org. But if whether you're attending the workshops or not, this is your opportunity to get some free advice on how to plan your retirement. John Nelson will be with us for the next hour. And if you'd like to join the conversation, if you've got a question, give us a call. Here's another number, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. John Nelson, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Glenn.
Well, the original What Color Is Your Parachute was a best-selling book on careers written by Richard Bowles. How did you end up using the same title for a retirement book?
Well, Dick Bowles is actually my co-author for this book. And that's because the millions of boomers who once read What Color Is Your Parachute, which is updated every year, by the way, the millions of boomers who've used that to find careers and change careers, many are now thinking about what comes next. And so I teamed up with Dick Bowles to write this companion for this stage of life we call retirement, but we really don't know what it will consist of.
Well, you're right that retirement is a concept that was created at the start of the industrial age, back at the turn of the last century, when workers toiled their entire lives at one factory job, and they were pretty much used up and tired out by the time they hit 65.
Yeah, that's right. And before the industrial era, across human history, you know, we slowed down in a much more gradual way. When we were hunter-gatherers or agrarian or living in extended families or weavers or bootmakers or what have you, you know, we slowed down pretty gradually. And it was not until this last 100 years or so when we came up with this all-or-nothing idea that you were a full-time worker on Friday and a retiree on Monday. And to tell you the truth, I don't know that that's so good for people anyway.
The factory owners were kind of interested in pushing that, weren't they? Because they wanted young blood in their factories over time, and they wanted to attract good workers and give them a pension and something to look forward to.
Yes, and especially, again, in an industrial era when the work is physical work and it's all based on strength or speed and things like that, younger workers always do better. And so in that industrial age, getting older workers out to pasture, so to speak, made sense, and the workers liked it too because work was nasty and dirty and dangerous. But things have changed in a lot of ways, so we're redesigning what these life stages even should be or can be.
How did the passage of Social Security and Medicare change the whole equation?
Well, the big thing it did was it added to some of the few private employers that had established pension plans, and it made that kind of regular guaranteed income available to the broad brush of Americans. And so it really did take people out of destitution or having to rely on family members and give them a secure way to stop working at 65 at that point was a pretty advanced age. So it really did create the modern version of retirement in America.
And there are a lot of people, I think, who are still worn out at 65. There's still a lot of people who, you know, you find your health failing at that point. And there are a lot of people who still work those hard physical jobs, construction jobs that, you know, it makes it hard to keep going after a certain age.
That is very true. And in fact, one of the truths of human life is that if you look at a class of kindergartners, and the range of physical health that they're in, there is a range of health. But, you know, in kindergarten, we're all pretty healthy. And every decade that goes by, we fan out so that there are some of us at 65 who literally are triathletes and some of us who can barely drag our tired old bodies back and forth to work. And of course, some literally are disabled. And so we can't generalize about how worn out or tired or sick we are other than to say the range is very broad and the kind of work that we need to think about being appropriate for our health is pretty broad too. So it's a very individual thing. But you're right. Some of us are physically worn out. Some of us have jobs that are really tiring and physically demanding. And a traditional retirement makes a lot of sense. Some of us, though, are not worn out. We're just burned out.
Right, right. So let's look at the changes. Now, the things that seem obvious to me is that most people are living longer. Not all of us, but most of us are.
Yes.
More people are doing work that isn't quite as physical and laborious as it used to be. And very few of us work for the same employer for our entire lives.
That's exactly right.
So what you write, and this is kind of an interesting concept, and it's one that's kind of pivotal to the way that you look at retirement in this book. In the last century, we viewed things as being three ages, the first characterized by youth, education, and development, the second by work and productivity, and the third by retirement and leisure. Now you say we've got four ages. The first and the second one are the same. The fourth is when your health is declining and you can no longer do things. But you say that for many people, retirement can be looked at as a third age, a real chance to create a new life for ourselves.
Yes, in fact, there was a genius at Cambridge University a couple decades ago by the name of Peter Laslett. And he was the first one to see that society was changing in fundamental ways, and way before anybody else, he started writing and talking about this, that basically starting in our 50s and extending into our 60s, that what we really have is a new stage of life that's never existed before, where we're living longer, healthier lives, that we have more freedom and flexibility to work less if we can afford it, or to change careers if we want to, or to change careers sometimes because we're downsized or we have to. But things are kind of freer that, you know, our kids are grown up. Hopefully we have some more flexibility, and that rather than just drifting into this leisure-based traditional retirement, we literally may be looking for new positive challenges and opportunities. And that's something that had never happened before. We went right from the drudgery of work into the very slow leisure kind of lifestyle, and we've got this new in-between stage. So he called that the third age.
You've also come up with something called the well-being model, which uses a number of variables based on an individual's core values to determine a retirement plan. Tell us about that and about how you came up with it.
Sure. Well, well-being is it's not a strange word to most people, but at the same time, it's a word we don't stop to think about very often. And if you look in most dictionaries and simply look up the definition of well-being, it's a state of prosperity, health, and happiness. That is prosperity in our physical surroundings, you know, our bank account and our house and the car and clothes and what have you. So prosperity in our physical surroundings, health in our physical self, and happiness in our non-physical self. So prosperity, health, and happiness covers really the whole existence. And what I noticed in doing retirement workshops and seminars with people who were not yet in retirement, and when they were talking about what they envisioned and wanted and hoped for in their next stage of life, those same three themes, those desires, those hopes, they just kept coming up from people over and over and over again. They'd say, well, I want to have enough money, and I want to have some physical comfort in my life. I also want to have a healthy enough body and access to medicine to be able to have the vitality to actually do something. And that once I have those, because those are almost like the ticket, those are the entrance fee, those are what you have to get taken care of first, that once I have those two things, then what I really just want is a chance at happiness. And that might be working or leisure or who knows what it is, but that those are the three areas of life that people would always talk about.
Is it true that this well-being model of yours is being used now by the U.S. government in the retirement programs for the federal workforce?
Yes, they adopted it a few years ago, and essentially they just needed to create a retirement education program. And while the federal government has had a good traditional pension plan and a savings plan for federal employees, they had not done a lot of retirement education. So in designing a retirement education program for their benefit officers to use, they needed a way to organize that information, and so they adopted my well-being model to do that.
Well, John, what's interesting about your book and what makes it different from other books on the subject is you're not just giving people financial advice, and you're also not giving everyone the same answer about how to retire. You say every one of us should come up with our own individual idea of retirement based on our individual core values.
Yeah, and that is very true, that what we really want, while we all want prosperity, health, and happiness, our definition of each of those does change based on what's most important to us. So based on our own values, we come up with different standards or criteria or goals in each of those areas. And so we need to make it up personally. That is, the baby boomers are, in a way, making up a new life stage because we're the first ones who are really aware of living longer, probably, and maybe the need to keep working. So as a demographic group, the baby boomers are making up this new life stage. And then each of us individually need to make up what this stage will be for us, because we know it's probably not going to be the same as it was for our parents, but it's not going to be the same as it is for our brothers or sisters or next-door neighbors or anybody else.
So you're saying it's important before you even plan for retirement to really do some self-analysis and figure out exactly what those core values are, what's really important for you.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. And let me just illustrate, for example, and the reason why it's important to do this literally in your 50s or to start thinking about it in your 50s is we can take two examples of workers, people just like you and I, and the first one doesn't love their job. That work is just work. In fact, it may be drudgery. It may be not pleasant at all. It may be just something that we have to do to earn a paycheck and keep everything going. And so the earliest that we can afford to retire is good news for us. That is, we just count the days down and save the dollars, and when we can stop working as soon as possible, life will be better. But there's an opposite scenario. At the other end of the continuum, there are some of us that are lucky enough to really love our work, to really love at least maybe half of our work.
Right, right.
But there's enough in there that we find it enjoyable, we find it as a positive challenge, we get a sense of meaning out of it. And for people in that situation, simply retiring because they can afford to do it could be one of the biggest mistakes of their life. Because I've worked with people who do that, and they mistakenly think they can find that same kind of engagement and sense of meaning in retirement. And they cast about, and they never find an activity in retirement that's as rewarding as their career was. and that they, if they could have known that in advance, they would have kept working longer, even though they could afford to retire. And so doing that kind of analysis means that your situation is probably somewhere in between those two, but it does mean you want to figure that out in advance and not simply retire because you can afford to or because you reach a certain age or because your coworkers are retiring. You need to decide for yourself what's best.
We're talking to John E. Nelson. He is the author of What is the Color of Your Parachute for Retirement? And again, he'll be doing a couple of workshops in Wausau, Tuesday, October 18th, one in the morning and one in the evening. If you want to find out more about that, you can call this number, 848-2927, or you can go to unitedwaymc.org. These workshops sponsored by the United Way of Marathon County. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, working to build the local economy and strengthen the community by making local business everybody's business. Learn more about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
If you just joined us, our guest is John Nelson, the author of What is the Color of Your Parachute for Retirement? We're talking about retirement, about advice to put your whole life really together and give yourself a different perspective as you head into this next stage of life. If you've got questions, we've got wide open phone lines right now, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to ask John a question. John, you talk about, again, tailoring retirement plans for individual people, and you've got a pie chart on one of the pages of your books showing that some people focus on being successful and ambitious and making a lot of money. Some people want to work on what you call self-transcendence, working for things like world peace or social justice or our place in the natural world. Some people open to change. They want to live a life of freedom and daring. Some people conservative, and they value tradition and the social order. You don't say that any of these are good or bad. It's just the way we are, and you say when we retire, we need to create a life based on what we believe in.
Yeah, that for many of us, it's when we get downsized or unemployed or retire by choice or become disabled and can't work. It's when that new chapter starts voluntarily or involuntarily that it sometimes causes us to stop and think about what really is most important to us. And that what we may realize is that in our earlier stages of life, we were driven by the needs of that stage, whether it was getting an education or getting established in our career or having kids or buying a home or contributing to our community, that we were doing things based on what was important at that time. And that when this new thing opens up, this opportunity or this necessity of making some changes, that the key then is to question, in fact, some of the values that we have been living by, because our life has changed, we've changed, we've continued to mature and grow, and that what was most important to us earlier may not be anymore. And to this, and so to just stop to do some real reflection on that, and that we can then make some better decisions about what's next in terms of work or leisure or volunteering or family time or financial decisions that all grow out of those core values that that are now really essential for us to address.
Now your book is full of little tests and forms for people to fill out, and you've got one test. You call it the Retirement Well-Being Profile, a reality check. Tell us about that.
Well, what that really is about is of those three things that we all want prosperity in our physical surroundings, we want health in our physical self, and we want a sense of happiness in our non-physical self. And that it's that one particular exercise from the book is really kind of a checklist to make sure that as we look at what the different elements are that are going to provide that, so that financially, there are entire books devoted to looking at whether you have adequate sources of retirement income and whether you have appropriate risk and return characteristics in your portfolio and you have enough insurance and those kinds of things. That this is a mini version of that. There are also entire books devoted to looking at health and wellness in aging. So this is a mini section of that, looking at what you're not only that you have adequate insurance for access to medical care, but even anticipating what kind of medical treatment you'll be seeking when you need it. That is, some people want completely traditional, conventional medicine, and more people at the middle part of life are seeking alternative treatment.
Mm-hmm.
From chiropractors and body workers and herbs and vitamins and other things like that, which typically health plans don't cover. So if that is the kind of health and wellness approach you want to take, you need to do some planning for that as well.
You say it's important to get it all down on one piece of paper if possible.
If possible, yes, because what's amazing is that when you just start sketching things out about the kind of life you want to have in these areas, that you're aware of where your money's coming from, you're aware of how you're going to stay healthy, and what the physical practices are, you know, the kinds of exercise or movement, social engagement, ways of using your skills and talents. Once you start actually jotting some of that down and pulling it all together, you can start to create a picture or a vision of how those things fit together.
Well, why don't you hold that thought? We've got to take a quick break for news, and we're going to get into the meat and potatoes in the next half hour of how all of these different dimensions or different areas of your future retirement all work together with John Nelson. We'll be back with more after this.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More at umr.com.
We're back on Route 51, Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Moberg. The subject today, retirement. Retirement in a volatile economic world. This 21st century has changed a lot of the rules, and we have a great guest to help us sort through our options and sort through some of the things that might help us create the kind of retirement that we want. He's John Nelson, the author of What is the Color of Your Parachute for Retirement? And he is doing a couple of workshops this coming Tuesday, October 18th, in Wausau at the Howard Johnson Conference Center, one in the morning and one in the evening. If you're interested in that, you can register or check out more information at unitedwaymc.org. Or if you'd like some free advice, you can give us a call right now at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. John, What you do in your book is create a Venn diagram or a chart with those core values that people value in the middle of it, and then you've got circles all the way around that middle circle, each concerning an individual dimension of life after you retire: financial, medical, biological, psychological, social, and geographical. Because, well, it's not a simple thing, right?
Yeah, and that these parts of life are related to each other. That for most of us, the first thing we're concerned about is, of course, is having enough money, making sure we stay healthy. But then we move beyond that. You know, what we may do, too, before we retire is have the naive idea that, geez, if we just have a stable income and if we can stay healthy and have access to health care, that life will be wonderful. But in working with people for many years who have been going through that transition, what they tell me is that that's not the case, that you need to make sure you have financial security and that you try to stay healthy, but that really your focus shifts pretty quickly to what life is really about, and that people tell me that they can't play enough rounds of golf or do enough gardening to really have a true sense of meaning or to have a positive challenge in life, or to be socially connected and make up for the loss of the friends or camaraderie they maybe had earlier in their career. And so once we get the health and the financial thing at least stabilized, it doesn't mean that, you know, we all are going to have as much money as we want or that we're all going to be totally healthy. But once we get some stability around those issues, it pretty quickly moves to, I think, what are actually more fundamental and bigger questions about what the next stage of life is really for. And that's what the new questions are.
Well, why don't we start off with the financial stuff, since that is what people seem to worry about most. You say that traditionally we had a three-legged stool with Social Security, employer pensions, and personal savings being each of those three legs. But you write that the stool has become kind of wobbly.
Yeah, that the uncertainty around having enough retirement income is something that most of us think about. I mean, a few of us have nothing to worry about, obviously, but the majority of us who even thought we would probably be okay now are having second thoughts. And that idea of the three-legged stool has been around since the early days, really, of Social Security. And that was the idea that with an employer pension and with personal savings and with Social Security, that those three elements or those three legs of the stool would provide, not everyone would have all three, but in general in our society we'd have those three to draw on. And what I've discovered is that most people now will really have to add two more legs, two more pillars to that to have a real sense of security. And one of those arises from the fact that many of us now do have significant home equity, not as much as we had a few years ago or as much as we hope to have, but most of us have, in fact, invested enough time and energy in a personal residence that the equity in that is a major part. In fact, for many people, it's the largest single asset they have. And so doing some careful planning around how and when to use that home equity, that's the fourth element. And then the fifth element, frankly, is either continuing to work part-time or continuing to keep the doors open and keeping our skills up and our social contacts going so that if we want to or need to earn an income in retirement, that that's a fifth way of we can of keeping ourselves more stable and having more sources of income.
So it is pretty important for quite a number of us, in these volatile times to keep working at least part-time or to find something else to do that can supplement what, your savings might not be there anymore. Your personal savings might have taken a hit because of the crashes in the stock market. I count three of them within the last 12 years.
Yeah.
And then we've got, employer pensions, which are non-existent for most of us. And
right.
Even Social Security is under attack now.
Right. And so you're exactly right that one of the things that has happened is that people who do keep the door open to working at least part-time in retirement just have more peace of mind, frankly, that whether or not that amounts to a huge amount of money, it's for a lot of people a source of security, or it's the extra money, it's the money to either have more peace of mind or more fun, but they find that if they can keep their skill set up, if they can keep their social networks going so that they can find work at the right time, that can be an important part of planning the next stage of life when we leave our full-time career.
Well, that can also provide social contacts for you, too, a circle of friends, people that you have to see every day, which is, you hear about people who retire and they do nothing but sit on a couch and watch television for the rest of their lives.
Yes, and their spouses are really happy about that. So you're exactly right. One of the things that we forget about is that for most of our life, our social engagement has been kind of mandatory, that we've had an automatic situation going all the way back to literally grade school and high school, where we were thrown together with people every single day who were in a similar life stage, who had similar interests and things going on in their lives. And so, geez, that was a social network that we automatically plugged into. And then if we went away to college, that really became a social network because we left our friends and family at home in many cases. But then we started in the career world and we ended up hanging out with our coworkers. That went on for a long time. We had kids, most of us, and so we started seeing the other parents from sports teams or the PTA and what have you. We had all these automatic ways of having social networks where we gained information and contacts, found out about job opportunities, found out about valuable information for managing our money or where to live, all of that stuff. And what people forget is that as they approach retirement, that a big chunk of their social network is still connected to their career or their job, and that when you retire, with rare exceptions, you walk away from that whole social network, and that for most people, that's not healthy because it cuts us off from support, sources of information, as well as just daily contact and activity that make us happier.
So what we've done here is we've moved from one of these circles or dimensions, the financial one, to the social one, which is another one that's so important when you're planning for the next stage of life. How difficult is it to hold on to friendships from work, from that second stage of life when you move into the third?
Well, here's a good example. If you are still in the workforce, you can think back yourself to people who you knew a few years ago before they retired, and you saw them almost every day, or regularly at least, and just stop and ask yourself how much you have interacted or seen those people since they retired. And the answer is, almost not at all.
And how many of us have friends that we've kept up from even earlier, from high school or college or childhood? Very few of us.
It turns into, yeah, just a few really key relationships that do transcend those life stage changes. And so that's very true also when we think about the stage after our main career. And so finding a way to replace that with other social networks of one kind or another are going to be helpful for most of us.
And let's talk about the most important social contact all of us have, that significant other, the spouse, the person we're married to.
Right.
Retirement can really take a hit on a relationship, a long-term relationship, because suddenly you've got two people who are together all the time.
Yeah.
Instead of having their personal space.
And is that a good thing or not? Well, I guess it depends, doesn't it? So, but one of the things it definitely does, as you point out, is that instead of having a small amount of time with each other, we have a large amount of time. And so that definitely puts pressure on the relationship in one way or another, and it's going to vary based on what's going on in the relationship. But there's no question that having a thoughtful approach to that, as well as a break from that, is something that most couples would be better off doing. So,
you call in your book, this is the phrase I love, you call retirement marriage on steroids. Saying if your marriage is harmonious and loving, it becomes more harmonious and loving, but if it's discordant and intolerant, it becomes more discordant and intolerant.
Yeah, that can be a pattern for a lot of couples. And so if you, in fact, relish your time away from each other, it may be that being away from each other at your respective jobs is part of what keeps your relationship afloat, you know, that you do only spend just a certain amount of time together, and that to really to magnify that by both of you simply being at home might not be a healthy thing.
So what steps can people take to reestablish a close relationship with their partner before the stress of retirement hits?
Well, I think that some people, in fact, would probably reconnect, you know, that they may have drifted apart while the kids were growing up and while they were both really engaged in their careers, and that they tended to just kind of drift apart, and that they really are fundamentally compatible, that they really love each other, that they like doing the same things, and that just simply being aware that having more time together is going to be an opportunity with a little bit of effort and creativity to be able to get back in more in sync with each other. So that's one pattern. But another pattern for some couples is simply to make sure that they have enough single activities that they each like to do so that they still are socially engaged on their own and can go and do those things, and to not put so much pressure on spending all that time together alone at home.
And also, you know, if you're in your 50s and you're still working, maybe now is the time to try to develop close relationships with some of the people that you really like, so that maybe those relationships can continue after you leave the workplace and you no longer see them on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, that when we reflect on some of those relationships we have through work that really are the most rewarding. I mean, some of the best friends we've ever had are at work, and by actually expanding those opportunities to get together with those folks while we're still in the workforce, we're more likely to actually keep up ties and see them later on. So simply knowing that that those relationships are not easily replaced can help us to make more arrangements and plans to keep them alive.
John Nelson, the author of What is the Color of Your Parachute for Retirement? He's doing a couple of workshops in Wausau this Tuesday, October 18th. When we come back, we're going to be talking about where do you live after you retire? Not only what city, what town, what climate, but what kind of a home do you live in when Route 51 continues?
Support for WPR comes from Northwind Renewable Energy in Stevens Point, partnering with agricultural and commercial industries to invest in central Wisconsin's renewable energy future. More about the benefits of solar for business at northwindre.com.
If you'd like to ask John Nelson a question, 1-800-780-9742. And John, let's talk about geography, about where we end up retiring. That's a very important dimension that people need to think about.
Yeah, and one of the most important things about geography is that it does affect the other parts of life, so that if we really do need to free up some of the equity from a home, for example, that is going to be a financial need that might be driven by our need to find a new place to live, a less expensive place to live, or get the equity out of our home. And that has an impact on our social relationships. If we're really connected into our neighborhood or live near family or want to live near family, that is a financial and a geographical and a social decision. If we think that we would like to continue working part-time or a new career for retirement, well, where we end up moving to, whether it's across town or across the state or across the country, that affects our ability to keep working and find work, too. So making these decisions about where to live and how much money we're going to have and whether to keep working and our social networks, those are all related decisions, and so geography is a big driver on these other parts of life, too.
So we've got to look at more than what climate we want to live in when we decide.
Yeah, that's very true. That I've literally known stories.
The trek to Sun City, right, in Arizona, everybody moves to Sun City.
Yeah, well, I've known people who moved to a warmer climate and discovered that, in fact, you know, they never made the social connections there that they had back home. They discovered that if they were going to find work there, that they didn't really have contacts. They didn't, you know, the best job opportunities often come from the friend of a friend of a friend or from our grapevine or network of people who get us connected in with the kind of job that's just perfect for us. And so that you move to another part of the country, you literally just might be somebody applying at Home Depot or Ace Hardware or somewhere as an entry-level job because, you know, you don't have that grapevine. You don't have that network. And so
you leave all your friends, your family behind, your social connections and
business contacts.
Hard to start over at the age of 65.
Yes. And so it really is true that some people do move very successfully to another part of the country or another community, but it's a lot more than picking out a architecturally pleasing design in a brochure, looking at square footage and prices and deciding that it's going to work for you. There's a lot more to it than that.
So let's say you've paid off your mortgage, you own your own home, and you want to retire there. You write that your dream home from the second age, in other words, from the time of your life when you're working and commuting, it can become a nightmare for the end of life.
Yeah, that one of the things that happens to us, too, is that we come, you know, if we have a home that we were fortunate enough to buy and maybe raise our kids and make some improvements along the way, we become emotionally attached to that physical residence. But the truth is that that may have been perfect for raising kids or even kids in college, and we get now to our next stage of life where we don't need that same configuration in a house. We don't need location that maybe is 10 minutes away from the job we used to have, and that there are all kinds of things that made that a dream home at one point, but now it's not going to fit for the aging process. So what we really would like to look for if we're smart about it is to think and recognize that over the 20 years or 25 years we might be retired, that we're going to slow down physically, that there might be a location, there might be stairs, there might be things about maintenance and upkeep for that property that at some point are just going to become too much for us. And that if we wait and don't realize that and kind of let it surprise us, that it's almost too late to make a, a good or a smart or a careful transition. And so it's almost better off to anticipate those future changes, even if they're 10 or 15 years down the road, and maybe make some changes now, moving to a house that's all on one level or a condo or something like that, that literally could be our permanent lifelong residence. But to do that while we're young and healthy and have lots of opportunities to make those changes.
And what it all comes down to is how can we be happy in our later years? And, boy, we're down to our last minute and a half here, John. The hour has gone very quickly. But happiness can be tied into having a meaningful life for yourself, something where you really get a sense of value and a sense of self-worth out of what you're doing.
And that's really what the Tuesday workshops by the United Way are really about, Glenn. They're about finding and tapping into a greater sense of meaning and purpose. And for some of us, that might be paid work. For some of us, it might be volunteer work. And so the United Way is one thing we can look at to possibly contribute to something greater than ourselves and to be part of something that is a positive, engaging challenge in life and to give something back.
John, do you have anything you'd like to add?
No, just that I would say, though, that whether you're in your 50s or your 60s or whether you need to work or can have a life of leisure, that this workshop, this seminar on Tuesday, I think will be something that will help you get in touch with whatever your next stage of life needs to be about.
And again, it's all based on your core values. It's all individual. There's no one-size-fits-all prescription for everybody. And financial stuff is important for us as we head into the latter stage of life, but there's so much more to it.
Totally.
John Nelson, thank you so much for being with us today. It's a great read, and I really enjoyed our conversation.
Likewise. Thank you, Glenn.
We want to thank today's guest, John E. Nelson, author of What is the Color of Your Parachute for Retirement? And a reminder that Mr. Nelson will be conducting those two workshops on retirement Tuesday, October 18th, the morning session from 9 a.m. to noon, and an evening session from 6 p.m. to 9 at the Howard Johnson Conference Center in Wausau. Those workshops are sponsored by the United Way of Marathon County and AARP. If you'd like more information, you can call 715-848-2927. That's 848-2927. Or go to unitedwaymc.org. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, and our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by The Beatles, Django Reinhardt, and Willie Nelson. Next Thursday on Route 51, we look at Randlin Homes, a Wausau-based organization that has just celebrated its 10th anniversary, helping homeless veterans and others recovering from drug and alcohol addiction. Route 51 can be heard every Thursday at 5 p.m. on the Ideas Network stations of North Central Wisconsin. You can also follow our adventures on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks again for riding along with us today. I'm Glenn Moberg. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. Until next week, we're heading out of town.
Oh, it's a long, long while. From May to December, but the days grow short, when you reach September, when the autumn weather turn the leaves to flame. One hasn't got time for the waiting game, and these few precious days I've spent with you. These precious days I'll